everything, its heat scorching me. The light vanished, and the wall reappeared. Sienna was still. I waited. Nobody said anything.
"Is that it?" I asked.
"That's all I could see."
"So, a big battle, blood, flames, human bones, and everyone burning?"
She nodded.
"That explains nothing."
Sienna spread her arms.
"Is there a prophecy?"
"Nothing came to me."
"Bullshit. There was always a prophecy. I want my money back," I said.
"You didn't pay us anything, ingrate,"
Maria told me.
"This is not helpful."
"Sorry," Sienna said. "It's not an exact science. If I get something else, I'll let you know."
I really wanted to bump my head against something hard, but nothing was around.
"My father is mobilizing his forces. He might be moving forward with his invasion plans." Yevdokia stopped knitting.
"How sure are you?"
"It's been reported by both Pack Scouts and ours." "How are you coming along with the White Warlock?"
Sienna scooted in her seat. Yevdokia pursed her lips.
"There are complications," she said.
"There can't be complications. You promised me you'd do this ritual. He isn't killing my son or my husband. If he invades and I have to kill myself, I want to be sure it isn't for nothing. Do I need to go down there and talk to this warlock myself?"
"No," Yevdokia and Sienna said in the same voice.
"Why not?"
They were hiding something.
"This is witch business," Yevdokia said. "If you blunder in there, waving your sword around, you'll spoil everything. We promised you the ritual, and we'll deliver." "When have I ever not delivered, Katya?"
The Russian name came out. Oh, boy. "I just want to make sure that if worse comes to worst, I don't die for nothing."
"We'll handle it," Sienna told me.
Maria cackled. The other two witches looked at her. She hacked and spat on the floor.
"Evil scum you are. Evil scum you'll always be. I hope you all die in a fire."
Yevdokia heaved a sigh.
"Awesome," I said. "Good chat. Thank you for the productive meeting. Look forward to our next one."
"One other thing," Yevdokia said. "Some knights from the Order asked to speak to us."
"Local?"
"No, from out of town."
Knight a better Norwood got around.
"They're trying to remove Nick Feldman from his position as the head of the chapter. He keeps pointing out that I exist, and they don't like it."
"We'll take care of it," Sienna promised.
I turned and walked back out of the tortoise. Outside, the air tasted fresh and sweet. The trees shimmered in the twilight breeze as the sky cooled after the burn of sunset. Lightning bugs flew here and there, tiny points of light in the indigo air. Roman thrust himself in front of me.
"You're planning to kill yourself?"
"Crap, me and my big mouth." "No."
"Explain."
I sighed.
"My father is susceptible to witch magic. It's older even than him, primitive in a way, but very powerful. Era told me that the hardest opponent he ever faced, outside of the war that killed most of our family, was a witch, and that woman almost killed him. The plan is to gather the covens together on the battlefield and perform a ritual, which would channel their combined power into a single person. I can't be that person. First, I'm not trained enough. Second, the point person in this scenario acts like a prism, concentrating and directing the power outward. I'm a lousy prism. My body just hoards all of the magic.
Let me guess, he said, his voice dry. The White Warlock is a good prism?
The best they know. The plan is to talk her into it. Except your mom and the other witches have been trying and haven't gotten anywhere.
You and your father are bound. If they kill him, you'll die too, Roman said. This is a stupid plan.
The witches aren't trying to kill him. They are trying to put him to sleep. If everything works as intended, Roland will fall asleep on the battlefield and hopefully sleep for decades or longer. They did it to Merlin. He is still somewhere out there sleeping. Roman thought about it.
Okay. Explain the killing yourself part.
The coven's power might not be enough. My dad is very strong. If he isn't going down, I may have to kill him myself, or at least weaken him enough for the spell to take over. There are consequences to that. Roman shook his staff at me.
I repeat, this is a stupid plan!
The raven at the top of the staff opened its beak and screeched at me. Did you know that when you're mad, your Russian accent disappears?
This is idiotic. You have a husband and a son. You're not killing your dad and dying because of it. I forbid it.
Okay, Your Holiness.
I'm serious. Death is forever. I know. My God is the Lord of Nav.
There might not be any other way, I said gently. If I knew with 100% certainty that killing myself would kill my father, I would do it without hesitation. You're right. I have a husband and a son, and I want them both to live long, happy lives, even if it's without me. But my dad is a lot older and more powerful than I am. If I just kill myself, he still might survive. With the witch's power upgrade, at least we stand a better chance of taking him down.
No, I won't stand for it.
I reached out and patted his arm. Thank you for being my friend.
Does Curran know?
No, and you're not going to tell him. This is the plan of last resort. If you tell him, he'll do something stupid to prevent me from entering that battlefield, and I'm our best chance at counteracting my father. If I'm not fighting, I'll definitely have to kill myself. He snarled something under his breath. The wooden raven screeched. I have an idea. What if instead of being mad and sicking your bird on me, you help me?
Help you do what?
I need to talk to the druids about the Picts.
What do Picts have to do with anything?
I explained the box and the symbol. He huffed.
Fine. Tomorrow.
Thank you. I turned to walk away.
Kate!
He called out. I turned around.
You're my friend. I don't have a lot of friends because of what I do. Every time my God calls to me, I bargain with him to keep people I don't know alive. What if we kill just 5 people? What if we make it 3? If we do it this way, perhaps we won't have to kill anyone. I fight for their lives. And here you are, not even trying. There has to be another way, you hear me? Find another way.
I'll try, I told him.
You do that.
The Magic crashed on my way home. No new vehicles sat in the driveway, and nobody came to the door. Curran usually heard me before I even pulled into the driveway. I let myself inside. Curran did say he would buy a new car today. He might have gotten held up. Hello? I called. Anybody home?
I'm home,
Adora called from downstairs. I went down into the basement. Fully furnished, it had been converted into a makeshift hospital room, with Yu Fong resting in a hospital bed. An IV stretched from his arm. Next to him, in a large plush chair, Adora curled up with a book. Lean, hard, with her dark hair falling to her shoulders, from the back she looked familiar. My shoulders were broader, my frame larger, and I had a couple of inches of height on her. Other than that, replace her katana with Surratt, and she might be the younger teenage me. How is he?
The same,
she said. Yu Fong showed no signs of life. I leaned close to him and put the back of my hand to his nose. A faint puff of air touched my skin. Still breathing.
He's pretty,
Adora observed. That he is. He looked like a beautiful painting. I wouldn't try kissing him. He isn't Sleeping Beauty. She wrinkled her nose at me.
Wasn't planning on it.
Do you want to be paid from Cutting Edge or through the Guild for the gig? She tilted her chin.
I'm working pro bono.
Since when?
This is a family matter, she said. I'll take care of him because you and Curran are family and you need help.
Who are you and what have you done with Adora? She grinned at me.
You're not as funny as you think.
I'm funny enough. Come and get me if he wakes up.
You killed one of my sisters today, she said.
News traveled fast.
I did.
She wanted to kill Conlon and eat him.
Did she suffer?
Yes.
Good.
Adora winked at me.
I put Curran's sweatpants on the stairs. I'm not going up to your love nest.
Love nest?
Your bedroom where you have sex?
Oh, boy.
I haven't had sex,
Adora volunteered.
But I've decided to try.
Is there a particular person you want to try it with?
No. I'm thinking about it.
Sex is about trust, I told her. You'll be at your most vulnerable. Try to choose well. She wrinkled her nose at me again. I went up the stairs. A big paper bag sat on the first landing. I looked inside. Gray pack sweatpants. Curran had grown up in them, and he kept wearing them despite us no longer being part of the pack. 1, 2, 5 pairs? Odd. He had 2 stacks of sweatpants in the closet. Hey! I called down to the basement. Who brought the sweatpants?
Some pack werewolf.
I walked upstairs and opened the closet doors. All of the old sweatpants were gone. Weird. I emptied the bag on the bathroom floor and sorted through the new sweatpants, checking the waistband and the elastic on the bottom of each pant leg for any hidden items. Nothing. Okay. I folded the sweatpants and put them back into the bag. Where did his other sweatpants go? A search of the hamper turned up nothing. Now I was invested in the mystery. I went downstairs and checked the laundry room, the washing machine, and the dryer. Nothing. That left the trash can outside. I went out and threw the lid open. A large trash bag sat on top, stretched out like someone had folded a blanket and stuffed it inside. I fished it out and pulled the strings open. Sweatpants. Still clean and folded. Well, and that wasn't weird, not at all. Why would he throw away all of his sweatpants and get new ones? Did they smell bad? I sniffed the sweatpants. Smelled like cotton to me. I grabbed a pair of old sweatpants and went down into the basement. Do these smell odd to you?
You want me to sniff Curran's sweatpants?
They're clean. I got them out of the garbage can. Adora blinked at me and held up one finger.
No.
Fine. I took the old sweatpants upstairs, pulled the new ones out of the bag, arranged them on the shelf, and laid a lone pair of old clean sweats on the bed next to the empty bag and a clean white t-shirt. Trap baited. Now I just had to wait for the lion to come home. It took him another 20 minutes. He walked through the door, carrying Conlon. Conlon saw me, scooted out of his arms, and charged up the stairs at breakneck speed. I had a split-second decision, to move or to take the hit. I took the hit. My back slapped the wooden floor. Ouch! He hugged me.
Mama!
I rolled to my feet. This sudden love is suspicious.
He got in trouble for trying to eat scented candles.
Curran came up the stairs. Where did he get the scented candles?
In the Guild's supply closet. Corinna bought a stack of them. She burns them in the locker room. Says it helps her with the wet dog smell.
Corinna worked for the Guild as a merc, but she was also a werejackal, and she was obsessed with her scent. I carried Conlon to the bedroom. Did you talk to Martha?
Not yet.
The pack delivered some sweatpants for you. I put them in the closet. What happened to the old ones?
I wore them out.
Bullshit. Coming from the man who resorted to using his alpha stare over keeping an ancient t-shirt? It wasn't just bullshit. It stank to high heaven. I nodded.
How did it go with the witches?
Curran stripped off his t-shirt, and I got a view of the world's best chest, all golden and muscled. Big battle, fire, human bones, blood, more fire.
That's it?
He put on the white t-shirt and took off his jeans. Yep, not very illuminating. But good news, Maria still hates me. He pulled the sweatpants on. They ended midway up his shin. What the heck? Hold on, baby. Mommy needs to do something. I set Conlon down, turned sideways, raised my leg, bending it at the knee, and extended. I'd done this hundreds of times to tap Curran on the throat when we were sparring. Usually I failed to connect, but the high kick was so automatic I did it on autopilot. My foot came up short.
Ooh, foreplay.
Curran caught my ankle. I pulled my leg out of his hand. Stand straight.
What is this?
He spread his arms. I stepped close to him. My nose touched his chest. In his human form, Curran topped me by 2.5 inches. I was 5'7" and he was close to 5'10". I was looking up at him now.
You are taller.
I hate to break it to you, but I'm done growing.
You're taller and you know you're taller. I found your sweatpants in the garbage. I dropped back and snapped a fast kick aiming at his head. He leaned back, letting my kick fly by. You're at least 6'2".
You measured me with your kick?
Yes. And your hair is an inch longer than it was this morning. What's happening?
Nothing I understand.
Why is this happening?
He raised his arms.
I'm trying to get stronger.
He did work out every chance he got.
I'm not trying to work on being taller. The hair thing is weird, I agree.
Is this normal? Is this some sort of first shapeshifter stage of life that you're going through?
My father isn't around, so we can't exactly ask him.
Have you talked to Doolittle about it? He smiled at me.
Would you like me to?
Yes, I would. What the hell is so funny?
You're worrying about my health.
You scare me. I sat on the bed. I was suddenly very tired. He crouched on the floor in front of me.
I'm okay.
I was thinking today about what it was like before.
Before?
Before the flare. He grinned.
You mean before I broke into your house and made you coffee for the first time?
You didn't break into my house. I left the door unlocked.
Details.
Gastek asked in Shinar for forgiveness today. He didn't know about the Sahanu, and he took it personally. He didn't want the whole me. He wanted the in Shinar part of me. Raphael told me I was the in Shinar. Some people will never see me as anything else.
I want the whole you,
he told me.
The Merc, the in Shinar, my wife, all of it, my Kate.
I know. I have this awful feeling that something screwed up is about to drop on us. I don't want anything to happen to you. I can't roll with that kind of punch, Curran.
Nothing will happen to me. I've got this.
He pulled me off the bed into a hug and kissed me.
Not going anywhere,
he whispered into my ear.
All yours, always.
I believed him, but the sick feeling in my stomach refused to go away. The phone woke me. I slipped from under Curran's arm and dragged myself to it. The clock said 6:20 a.m.
Ugh.
Kate Leonard. Curran laughed under his breath.
Hey, Kate.
Sheriff Bo Clayton said into the phone. He sounded dull, like he'd seen something he wanted to forget. I wouldn't like this call.
You called about Serenby.
I did.
I might have something for you.
I'll be there as soon as I can. I hung up. Last night, after we sorted ourselves out, Curran had called Martha and asked her to come watch Conlon today and to bring the book club. She'd asked him if he meant the whole book club, and he said yes. She told him she'd be here at 9. If I waited until 9, the magic could drop. I needed to go now while the magic was active. I have to go, I told Curran.
I'll catch up, he said.
The small settlement of Ruby lay deep in the heart of Milton County. 2 streets, 17 houses, a post office, a small store with a gas station, and a rural defense tower. Rural Defense, an extension of the National Guard, was tasked with protecting the small settlements. It was one step up from a militia. It took Julie and me roughly 2 hours to get there, even with Julie driving, but we'd made it while the magic was still up. Now we stood on the street, the silent houses flanking us. A dead Labrador retriever lay on my left. Someone had built a pyre at the end of the street. It was 6 feet tall and shaped like a cone. Behind us, Beau Clayton and 2 of his deputies waited, all 3 still on horseback. The deputy on the right with a crossbow, and the other with a shotgun. These were cautious people covering all the bases. Beau, as big as a mountain, had lost all of his usual cheer. His eyes had gone flat and dark. A postal carrier reported the empty village last night, but Beau had been dealing with another matter and didn't get the message until this morning. He and the deputies had swept the village and found abandoned houses, unmade beds, and dead dogs.
What do you make of the pyre? Beau asked me.
I don't know. I got a prophecy from the witch oracle yesterday. It had a lot of fire in it. Are you sure the locals didn't build it themselves?
There is no way to tell, Beau said. We don't come this way too often.
We waited. Finally, Julie glanced at me. Blue. Across the board? She nodded. Human magic. They took the people, just like Serenby. It had to stop. It had to stop now. A man walked into the street, tall, broad-shouldered, and wearing armor tinted with blue. The dark metal scales traced his body, following its contours, wider on his chest and smaller on his waist. The armor flowed, flexible, protecting without impeding his movement, each scale just the right size, almost as if it were custom-made. I'd never seen anything like it until yesterday, when I saw that armor in Sienna's vision. I scrutinized the warrior. One scale on his right shoulder shimmered with gold. His helmet shielded his skull, leaving his face open, a variation of a Chalcidian helm I wasn't familiar with. His face looked oddly blank. He was Caucasian, blue-eyed, and the locks of hair falling from under the helmet were blonde. 2 sword hilts protruded over his shoulders. He carried a torch in his hand. Fire danced at the end of it.
I thought you said you did a sweep, I said quietly.
We did,
Beau said. The warrior dropped the torch onto the pyre. Flames dashed up the branches.
Did he soak it in gasoline or something?
Julie asked.
I didn't smell any when I looked at it,
one of the deputies told her. The warrior stepped in front of the pyre, his back to it, and faced us.
Sheriff's Department,
Beau called out, his voice harsh.
Get down on the ground.
The warrior reached behind his back and drew the 2 swords. Oh, good. Apparently it was cutting time. The blades looked to be about 21 or 22 inches long, with a swept profile, similar to a modern Filipino espada, a cross between a Spanish sword and a traditional garab blade. Lively and fast, while still delivering a lot of cutting power in either a slash or a thrust. The fire behind the warrior surged up.
Wait. Don't tell me.
A figure appeared in the flames, a tall man in golden scale armor. A white cloak edged with wolf fur rode on his shoulders, his blonde hair falling on it in a combed wave. A golden torque caught his neck. My box and Serenby were connected.
That son of a bitch!
Anger boiled inside me and solidified into dark ice.
all those people dead. I'm coming for you. Just wait.
What the hell?
The other deputy said. We're being invaded, I said. That's their king, and this is his champion.
Does he do magic? Beau asked.
He's leaving a blue trail, Julie said.
Can he?
Beau said, his voice calculating.
Shoot that bastard.
Kenny raised his crossbow. A small blue spark burst at the tip of the bolt. He sighted and fired. The warrior opened his mouth. Fire tore out of it. The scorched remnants of the bolt fell to the ground. Great. He spat fire. My favorite. I think that's my cue. I unsheathed Surratt.
There are five of us and one of him, Kenny pointed out. This isn't about winning, Beau said. This is about fear. This asshole has been coming into our villages and stealing our people. He thinks he can do whatever he wants and none of us can stop him. He needs to know that one of ours can beat one of his. Have fun, Leonard.
I walked into the middle of the street. The warrior moved forward, one light step. Toe walker. Most people stepped on their heel first. We had the cushy benefits of modern footwear, and we walked mostly paved streets. He stepped on the ball of his foot first, feeling the ground with his toes before putting his full weight on it. You almost never saw this outside cultures that still ran around barefoot. The warrior rotated his blades, warming up his wrists. I did the same. No gauntlets. Hard to effectively hold a blade with an armored gauntlet. That left his knuckles nice and bare. I began to circle, slowly. He was 6 feet tall, at least 200 pounds, likely more with his armor. The $64,000 question was, how thick was that armor? Let's see how fast you are with your two swords. He looked at my blade and dropped his left sword to the ground. Smart. Dual swords had their uses. They were effective for cutting yourself out of a crowd or for blocking a much heavier blade, but in one-on-one, the single sword ruled. I was liking this less and less. I stopped about 2 feet from him. He watched me. I watched him. Show me what you've got. He struck, fast, bringing the blade down from my right. I parried it just enough to let his blade slide off mine and move back. Strong. Getting into a hit-for-hit game with him would wear me out. He reversed the swing. I angled Surratt to let the blow slide off the flat of my blade and move back again. The warrior charged, bringing his sword down in a devastating blow. I lunged to the left, ducking, and thrust Surratt into his armpit, like trying to thrust through rock. I jerked the blade back and jumped out of the way. He took a step back, his blue eyes unblinking and cold. Blood coated the very tip of Surratt's blade. If it weren't for the armor, he would be bleeding to death. Slashing him was out. The blade wouldn't penetrate. I could power word him, but that would be against the rules. Beau was right. I needed to beat this guy with my sword one-on-one. Nothing short of that would give the asshole in the fire pause. The warrior charged again, raining blows. Left, right, left. Parry, dodge, parry, back away, parry. He was damn strong and he fought like he had gone into battle for his life many times. Nothing showy, no movement wasted. Every blow vicious and calculated. Strike, strike. Nice trick, but I saw that. Strike. Parry, parry, parry. The tip of his blade carved a path across my right forearm. Shit! We broke apart. I had to win this. If he beat me, it would paint us as easy prey. He lunged. I spun out of the way. He struck from the right again, expecting me to dodge. Instead, I stepped into the blow, planting my feet and caught his wrist. The shock reverberated all the way into my toes, and while it was still moving through me, I drove Surratt toward his gut. He caught the blade with his hand, and I grinned at him and jerked Surratt back. The blade cut through his hand like it was butter. He snarled in pain. His eyes flashed amber. The vision from the witch oracle flashed before me. Amber eyes, and then I spun away and ran. Flames burst from his mouth in a cone, roaring after me. Heat bathed me. I dropped to the ground. The scorching heat tore above me. I rolled to my feet. A curtain of smoke hung between us, flames shining inside it. He broke the rules and went to his magic. Oh, goody. I slid the flat of Surratt's blade across the cut on my forearm, letting the crimson wet it. He came through the smoke and fire, his eyes blazing, his sword raised. I sent a pulse of magic through my blood, a hair-thin red edge crystallized on Surratt's blade. He barreled at me, huge, his eyes on fire. I stabbed him in the stomach. The blade sliced through the armor, flesh and organs, and scraped his spine, severing the nerves. His legs went out. He dropped to his knees. The smoke cleared. I slashed at his neck. There was almost no resistance. His head rolled off his shoulders. I picked it up, walked to the pyre, and tossed it at the blonde asshole in the flames. It fell through the fire. There. That's for you. Keep it. The man in the fire and I stared at each other. His armor matched that of his champions, but where the warrior's armor was tinted with blue, the scales on his body were a deep reddish gold. A gold chain held his cape in place, its clasp studded with what were probably real rubies. He had so much gold on him his knees should have been shaking from the weight. If his image was life-sized, he would be huge, at least 6.5 feet tall. Of course, he could be 4 feet tall and just made himself look larger. Heat bathed me from the side. The warrior's body burned from the inside out, his armor melting. There goes my evidence. The man in the fire nodded to me. Be patient. No ranting. Wait for him to tell you what he wants and who he is, and then tell him you're going to cut his head off. Zen. Diplomacy. I could do it. You murdered my people! The language of power rolled off my tongue. Probably shouldn't have started with that. I took from outside your borders. He had a deep, resonant voice. The power in it rolled through the village, unimaginably ancient. The tiny hairs on the back of my neck rose on end. Behind me, one of the deputies made a choking sound. They are all my people!
Do you claim dominion over the entire world, then, daughter of Nimrod?
I don't claim dominion. I claim kinship. Every time you enter this world and kill, you kill one of my own. He chuckled.
You're arrogant, like the rest of your clan.
I wish I could reach into the flames. My hands itched. I could almost hear the sound of his windpipe breaking under my fingers.
Have you given any consideration to your answer?
I raised Surratt and looked at its edge. White curls of vapor rose from the blade. Surratt didn't like him. Diplomacy, Curran's voice said in my head. Find out what he wants and how big of a threat he is. Let's summarize. You sent me a box of ashes with a knife and a rose in it.
Yes.
He shifted into English, too, but it didn't help. His voice filled the space, deep and overpowering. What am I supposed to do with it? What does it mean? Is it a gift? He paused.
I see. You don't understand.
I don't. Enlighten me.
The world is mine. It had a brief reprieve, but now I've returned. Much has changed.
Go on.
I will need a queen.
I raised my eyebrow at him.
I'm offering you a crown. Sit by my side and share in my power. Be my guide in the new age.
And if I don't? Amber flashed in his eyes.
I'll burn your world.
You need to work on your proposal delivery. First come flowers and gifts, then dating, and only then offers of marriage. He fixed me with his stare, a hard, unblinking gaze.
You're mocking me.
You're a pretty bright boy, aren't you? I quoted the line from the old story. He wouldn't get it, but I thought it was funny.
You don't understand what I am offering.
How exactly did you think this proposal would go? Hi, here I am, I murdered a bunch of people in a horrible way, marry me or I'll burn everything down. Who would agree to it? You're not someone to marry. You're a threat to eliminate.
Your aunt said the same thing to my brother once, he said.
Oh, crap. How did that go for your brother? He smiled. There was something wrong with his teeth. They weren't quite fangs, but they were sharper and more conical than human teeth had a right to be.
Your aunt and your father killed him, but I am not my brother.
So your brother got his ass kicked by my family? You can see how that isn't in your favor. He laughed.
Do you know why my brother sailed to your family's lands? Because he fought me for mine and lost. They faced but a weak imitation of what true power is with their combined strength, and he nearly ended them.
Let me guess, you're the true power?
I am. I hold gods prisoner, tormenting them for my pleasure. I bring war and terror. I am Naeg, the Undying. I am legend. All who know me bow to me.
The way he said legend sent shivers down my spine. I shrugged. Never heard of you.
Then I shall have to remedy that.
Why don't you step out of that fire and I'll cut your legend short? He laughed. Little streaks of smoke swirled around him.
I will give you a demonstration, daughter of Nimrod. Then we shall speak again.
The fire went out like a snuffed-out candle. I turned to Julie and the lawman.
Well,
Beau said, his voice calm.
Kenny, climb off Meredith. Find a phone and call down to the station. Tell them we've got another invasion on our hands and to get the evacuation alert out there.
I headed to the gas station.
Where are we going?
Julie caught up with me.
We're going to relight that pyre. Are you sure he is human?
Yes, I'm sure.
Why are we relighting the pyre?
Because we've got an ancient fire mage on our hands and he has a vendetta against my family. I need to talk to my father. Check the phone, and if it works, call home and leave a message on the answering machine for Era with everything you heard. Then call Roman and tell him we had a change of plans. Tell him to swing by the house and pick up the box. Adora should be home, and she will let him in. We can't wait till tonight. We need to call the druids now.
Why?
Because Naeg promised to give me a demonstration of his power. He doesn't consider anything he's done up to now a proper demonstration. According to him, making 200 people disappear and sending a human who burned to death to deliver a message doesn't count.
Crap,
Julie said. Find the phone. Call Curran after you're done and tell him not to bother coming here. I'm going straight to the druids once I'm done, and I doubt they'll let him in. She ran behind the counter. I headed to the pump. Era had told me that the more I gave of myself to the fire, the louder it would be for my father. This time, Roland would answer me. I would scream into that fire and feed it magic until he picked up.
Chapter 12.
It will be okay,
Roman told me from the passenger seat. I took the turn too fast. The jeep jumped over a protruding root. The trees on both sides of the road stood so thick, it was like driving through a green tunnel. The witch forest thrived during magic waves. I sat by that damn fire for 2 hours. I fed enough magic into it to wake the dead. I screamed myself hoarse.
Parents, Roman said, can't live with them, can't kill them. You call, they don't pick up. You don't call, they get offended. Then they chew a hole in your head because you're a bad son.
He is a bad father, I snarled.
Okay, Roman said, his voice soothing. Of course he is. Be reasonable. This is a guy who ordered his own grandson killed.
Nobody is saying that he is a good father. All I'm saying is that parents don't like being yelled at. He knows you're upset and he doesn't want to take your calls.
That's family business. This is an outsider attacking us. This is different.
Roman sighed.
I get it. I really do. Have you tried pleading? Maybe cry a little? That way he would know it was safe to take the call, and he would swoop in like a savior. Parents love to play saviors.
I glared at him.
He raised his hands.
All I'm saying is when I need to talk to my dad, I don't call him and scream at him because he got into a drunken brawl with Perun's Volv, and Perun's idiot kid followers decided to taser Chernobog's idol in his shrine because that's the closest they can come to lightning, and now my god wants them all murdered. I call and say, hey, Dad, I know you're busy, but I've got a serious situation on my hands and I need your advice. Just try my way. I bet it will work.
Where the hell is this damn camp?
Make a right at the next fork.
I took the next turn. The jeep screeched, protesting the bumpy road. It was just me, the woods, and the black Volv. I'd sent Julie back. I'd wanted to bring her, but Roman had dug his heels in. According to him, he'd had to cash in all his favors, and that would only cover him and me.
I feel like we're driving in circles.
We are. They're deciding if they're going to let us in.
I brought the jeep to a halt and parked.
What are you doing?
I don't have time for druid shenanigans.
I shut the engine off, opened the passenger door, and stepped out.
This is a mistake,
Roman told me. I looked up into the treetops.
You know me, I called out. You know who I am and what I do. I brought you a name today. Naig. Naig the Undying. The legend. I spoke to him, and he is coming for all of us. I need to know who he is.
The trees didn't respond. I waited. The forest churned with life. Squirrels fussed at each other. A woodpecker drummed a steady staccato somewhere to the left. Things rustled in the underbrush. Nothing. I got back into the jeep. The witch forest was outside my borders. The land called to me. It needed to be claimed and protected. All that magic stretching to me, all that life vulnerable to outside threats, I could claim it and flesh the druids out like foxes out of their flooded burrow.
That was a hell of a thought.
I'd had over 2 years to deal with having claimed the city. I'd learned to manage the craving for more. But some days, the urge to take the land, to make it my own, gripped me. My aunt called it the Shar, the need to hold and protect. It was bred into our family to make us better rulers. Most of my now-deceased relatives had been taught how to handle it in childhood. I'd had to deal with it as an adult, and it almost drove me off a cliff. I'd beaten it, but once in a while, when it reared its ugly head, I had to beat it back again. I wouldn't be claiming anything today. I would chant the engine back into life, and Roman and I would go home.
Huh, Roman said. I take back what I said. Your way is faster.
I looked up. A palisade rose in the middle of what a moment ago was dense forest. Huge trees formed its wall, their trunks perfectly straight and touching each other. A gate reinforced with iron and bristling with spikes guarded the entrance. Dark blood stained the tips of the 4-foot spikes. The gate shuddered and slid aside.
We need to hurry now, Roman said, grabbing a backpack, before they change their mind.
We walked to the gates. A Caucasian man in his 40s stood in the center, leaning on a staff. He wore plain trousers, boots, and no shirt. Blue whorls and symbols, painted in blue ink, decorated his muscled torso. His headdress, made of a grizzly's head, gave him another 6 inches of height. His face fit right between the bear's jaws. If I fought him, I'd come from the side. His peripheral vision had to be shit with all that fur. The man glared at us, looking like he was about to roar and unleash a Pictish horde. The last time I saw him, he'd worn a snow-white robe and was groomed like he was about to attend a white-tie event. He'd been smiling at some children at the solstice festival and handing out candied fruit with the other druids as part of their community outreach.
"Hi, we're druids. We wear pretty white clothes, hand out sweets, and teach about honoring trees and forests. Look at us, all gentle and non-threatening. We'd never strip naked, paint ourselves with battle symbols, and dance around the woods with savage weapons and fur headdresses."
Yeah, right. No wonder they didn't want anyone to come to their masquerades in the woods. "Is that Grand Druid dressed?"
"Uh-huh," Roman murmured. "Watch what you say."
"I always watch what I say. If the words, 'I didn't know you were having a fancy dress-up party, pity I wasn't invited,' come out of your lips, I'll turn around and go home, and that's a promise."
"Killjoy, these are my colleagues from work. I have to have a good relationship with these people."
"Okay, okay." Next to the Grand Druid stood a woman. She was about 2 inches shorter than me, with bronze skin and thick wavy brown hair. She wore an outfit of fur and carried a spear. Judging by the definition on her arms, she could use it, too.
"What about her?" I murmured.
"Jennifer Rivera."
He pronounced Rivera like Rivera, but with a D sound.
"What does she do?"
"You don't want to find out. And call her Jen."
My luck with women named Jennifer wasn't exactly great, so Jen would work just fine. Behind the pair stretched a camp. People walked back and forth, some naked, some clothed, most painted. Weapons waited in racks. The magic was so thick, if it were fog, we wouldn't be able to see past 3 feet. Here was hoping there were no wicker men present, because if they tried to sacrifice someone or something by burning them alive, I wouldn't be able to sit on my hands, professional relationship or not. Dressed met my gaze.
"You said nag."
"Yes." He looked at Jen. She shrugged.
"Anything is possible."
2 men joined us. One old and stooped, wearing an ankle-length tunic, his white beard stretching down to his waist. The other was in his 30s and looked like he got his exercise by tossing cows into the air for fun. Roman bowed. I did too. Dressed held up 1 finger to us and turned to the old man.
"This woman says she spoke with Nag."
"Huh?"
the old man asked.
"Nag,"
Dressed repeated.
"I can't hear you. Stop mumbling."
Dressed sucked in a lungful of air.
"She says she spoke to Nag."
People stopped what they were doing and stared at us. Dressed waved them off.
"Nag?"
The old druid peered at him.
"Oh, that's not good."
Dressed looked like he wanted to slap himself.
"Brendan, he has to wear his hearing aid when he comes to the rites."
Brendan raised his hands the size of shovels.
"What do you want me to do? Sit on him and shove it into his ear? He takes it out. He says he wants to be one with nature."
"Uh-huh!"
a male voice called out. I turned. A man was striding toward us. Thin and painted with blue, he wore a cloak of crow feathers and carried a large black chicken. Dressed's face drooped.
"I told you I had a vision about it,"
the chicken man announced.
"I told you last Thursday. I said, Nag is coming, and you said, Elpin, stop sacrificing your chickens. Stop putting yourself into a trance. Stop looking at the entrails, and stop calling me in the middle of the night. You said that if I couldn't fall asleep, I needed to drink a beer and suck it up."
"He's right," Jen said. "You need to leave those chickens alone. It's unnatural."
"For the last time, I don't sacrifice chickens,"
Elpin declared.
"I saw a dead chicken in your kitchen last week,"
Brendan told him.
"I was going to cook it for dinner. I bought it at the market. I don't eat my friends. I like to have them because they help me with astral projection. Their squawking is soothing.
Jen dragged her hand over her face. Roman cleared his throat, dressed, looked at him. Roman unzipped the backpack and held it open for me. I took the box out. The druids took a step back in unison. Only Jen remained. She reached out, touched the box, and withdrew her hand.
"Open it," Drest said.
I opened the lid. They peered at the contents. The old druid reached out ever so slowly, his ancient hand shaking, grasped some ash between his fingers, and let it fall back into the box. His face went slack. He looked like he was about to weep.
"It will be all right, Grandfather," Drest said gently. "It will be all right."
"Everything will burn," the old man said. "He will set the world on fire."
"No, he won't,"
Drest nodded to Brendan, and the big man gently steered the elderly druid away. Drest turned to me.
"Put it away,"
I did.
"Come with me."
He led us deeper into the camp.
"What did Nag say when you spoke to him?"
"He told me that he gave the world a break, but now he is back and he is going to conquer it. We think he has a place outside of time, like Morrigan's mists. We've had people disappear, whole settlements, Serenby and Ruby in Milton County. He took them, killed them, and boiled them to extract their bones. Any idea why he would be doing that?" Jen shook her head.
"No, but he is a crafty old bastard. If he's doing that, it isn't for anything good."
Elpin just looked like he would collapse at any moment. We reached the back of the camp. A big slab of rock protruded from the ground, one side polished and covered in Pictish symbols. Kudzu had climbed it, covering the top. An outline of Ireland and the British Isles was carved in the corner. Drest pointed to Ireland.
"First came the sorceress Kessir and her people. They inhabit the isle for a bit, then die out. Then comes Partholon and his people. They start farming, fishing, building houses. Then in 1 week they all die of plague."
"Then comes Nemed," I said. I had brushed up on British magic history. Most people thought it was 1/10 history, and the rest was equally myth, wishful thinking, and bullshit, but I'd read it all the same. Roman threw me a cautious look.
"The correct name is Neimhead," Jen said. "When you pronounce it correctly, it sounds like
Neeg," Drest finished.
"Only Celts would use 9 letters to make 1 sound."
"He called himself that because he wanted people to think he was holy," Jen sneered. "Nag of the skies, Nag the unkillable, Nag the mighty."
Drest snorted.
"He conquers Ireland and moves on to Scotland."
"That's not how the legend goes," I said.
"Legends are often wrong. This isn't legend,"
Elpin said softly.
"It's our history."
"He steals babies and turns them into his army," Drest continued. "The Picts fight him until he pushes them all the way to the eastern edge of Scotland. There is nowhere to go but the sea and the Scottish cliffs, so they outsmart him. They build the Standing Stones. There are many kinds. Some warp the magic around them. They are the curving kind. Others sound an alarm. They are the warning kind, and so on."
He pointed to the carvings on the surface of the stone.
"The curving stones hide in the villages. Nag's troops can't find the settlements, so he can't find the settlements, and if he does, the shielding stones give people protection long enough to escape."
"What do the symbols mean?" I asked.
"Disc and rectangle," Elpin said. The settlement has a warning stone that will let others know when Naeg is coming. The crescent and V-rod means the shield is holding over the settlement. Don't fire arrows at it even if Naeg is coming, because they won't pierce it. Disc and rectangle means the settlement has the sun disc to signal for help.
They were explanatory signs, like traffic signals, so bloody simple. Double disc and Z-rod? I asked. He signed the box with it. Elpin grimaced.
He picked that symbol for himself. His troops would mark things with it to remind you of what happens when you disobey him.
What is it?
Shackles, Jen said. Naeg doesn't have servants, only slaves.
Elpin traced the outline of the symbol on the stone.
When you see it with the broken arrow, it means here Naeg can't see you, here you are free.
What about this one? Roman asked, pointing at another symbol, which looked vaguely like a flower.
Bagpipes, Drest said.
What do bagpipes have to do with anything? I asked. He shrugged.
Bagpipes were battle music.
He would have killed everyone eventually, Jen told us. But then the Fomorians invaded and kept him busy. They killed his wife. His children, he either killed himself or ran off.
He doesn't like competition, Drest grimaced. His brother tried to fight him, lost, and sailed off with his own portion of the army. They got their asses kicked somewhere in Europe. Only one ship came back.
What about the Tuatha De Danann? I asked.
They made a bargain with Naeg, Drest said. Gave him tribute. By that point, he'd moved on to Scotland anyway. Bigger place, more land. He had both islands before he was done.
How did your ancestors beat him? Roman asked.
They didn't.
Drest's face was grim.
They outlasted him. Eventually the magic fell, and one day he disappeared. He'd clawed himself a lair outside our world and took his horde and army with him. Occasionally, he'd raid while the magic held. You never knew when or where he'd pop up. Our people were so scared of him, they kept building curving stones centuries after he went dormant.
In all that time, nobody managed to get close enough to hurt him? I asked. I understand he has fire magic, but I fought Morfran, and I met Morrigan. You're telling me nobody could get to this guy?
You don't get it, Drest said.
Show her,
Jen told him. Drest touched the kudzu. It rolled back, creeping up and over. The stone lay bare. I looked at the carving in the top of it.
My insides went cold.
Naeg isn't a man,
Elpin said softly.
He is a dragon, I whispered.
A colossal dragon reared up on the battlefield, the figures of fighters tiny next to him. A cone of churning flame tore out of his mouth, disintegrating the palisade. That was whom I'd felt in the clouds above me. That was why he'd tried to kill Yufong. Goosebumps ran up my arms.
But his magic is blue, I said, like a human.
All dragon magic is blue,
Elpin said.
Everyone knows that, Jen said.
Naeg will never find us, Drest told me. We have curving stones, but you're fucked.
Roman and I didn't talk until we reached the city.
It could be metaphorical, he finally said.
It's not.
I told him about Yufong. Everything we ever read about dragons suggests they are highly territorial. He felt Yufong and tried to take out the competition.
But he was in human shape when you saw him. So what, he can shapeshift?
I don't know.
Aspid can't shapeshift, Roman said. It's a blessing, too, or he would follow me everywhere, licking me. That would be weird.
Aspid?
an enormous black serpent dragon who belonged to Chernobog, had a deep, all-encompassing puppy love for Roman, which he expressed by wrapping his tongue around the black wolf.
"We need to call an emergency conclave," I said.
The conclave had started as a way to avoid conflicts between the pack and the people, but in an emergency,